The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Now, Janine Cummins' book, American Dirt, has been getting huge hype worldwide. Oprah picked it for her book club and critics have been praising it and saying, yeah, this is definitely going to be the book of 2020. The book has also been divisive because of the story it tells, the story of Lydia and Luca, mother and son, on the run as they flee Mexico with the hope of making it to the United States of America. Janine joins us now on the line from New York City. Good afternoon, good morning, Janine Cummins.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Yeah, good to talk to you. We've been getting texts about you from relations and friends. Good luck on the Ray D'Arcy today to our amazing auntie Janine Cummins from your nieces Áine, Riana and Serla in Cork.
Lovely. Yeah, very nice.
We love you and are so proud of you. And
I love you too, girls.
The Stapleton family were on as well. I don't know if you know them, but they were on from New York as well. Will we get the Irish connections out of the way?
Well, we can, yeah. I'm married to a Mayo man. He grew up in Swinford. We have family now in Westport. That's where his parents are. Lots of family in Galway, Renmore and Headford. And the ones you just heard from down in Glenmire and Cork. I also lived in Belfast for a while, years ago. My dad's father's from Tipperary. So they're, you know, my roots in Ireland are quite deep.
Yeah, you have a bit of an Irish accent there.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, there isn't.
It slips in whenever I'm talking to Irish people.
Right. By the end of our conversation, you'll be pure Mayo.
Yeah, I will. And then when I go to Belfast, I'm, what about you, mucker? It's desperate.
Well, the other thing that I discovered, because I did it myself for 5 years, but you were a Rose of Tralee back in 1993.
Yes. I was a Rose of Tralee.
And you appeared on the television.
I was with Mr. Gayburn.
Yes, what a privilege! And
my family was so proud. It was a lovely time.
What roles were you?
Washington D.C.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was trying to see if your record stands for the longest interview.
Oh, I mean, it was a long interview.
Seventeen minutes it clocked in at. 17 minutes.
I think so. Yeah, something about like that. Yeah, it was a long interview. Yeah. It was an incredible experience, you know, for my parents, and I made some lifelong friends there. So something I look back fondly on for sure.
So you're married to Joe, as you say. He's originally from Mayo. And Aoife and Clodagh are the two children. What ages are Aoife and Clodagh?
12 and 9. Yeah. Well, and we visit Ireland every year, and they are so proud, you know, to be my daughter Aoife especially will always say to people when they don't know how to pronounce her name over here, she's like, it's Aoife, I'm Irish, you know. And then we go to Westport and she goes into Elvery's and kits herself out in all the Mayo gear she can find, and you know, they love Ireland. They love all their cousins out there, and We have a blast whenever we come.
The red and green. Now, American Dirt. Yeah. So I said there, and that's the story of it. It's Lydia and Luca who are fleeing the terror and murdering of the cartels and trying to get from their home in Acapulco up into the United States of America to have a new life. And it tells their story of boarding freight trains and people they encounter on the way, good and bad. Yeah. It's a gripping read. It's a real page turner. I really enjoyed it. So congratulations on that. I'm a bit confused, and you might put me straight on this. So you've been accused of cultural appropriation.
Yeah.
The people who have criticised you have said that as a white woman, you have no right to write the story of a Mexican woman fleeing her own country.
I think that is a very simplified version of the conversation that's happening here, which is, in fact, a very, very complicated and long simmering conversation, which, you know, has some deep roots in legitimate pain. The argument goes that, and is true, that voices of color and women's voices in particular have been devalued and hijacked in the publishing industry for a very long time. And then I came along and wrote a book about compulsory migration that got just a tremendous amount of buzz. And it you know, there are concerns about why this is the book. So it has been, you know, it's been a challenging week trying to sort of sort through all of this and process it, because this book has been sort of percolating out in the world for over a year, and nobody saw this coming. There was so much love and praise for this book across a very diverse landscape of readership that included many, many Latinx authors. I myself am also part Puerto Rican, and, you know, I've been put in a kind of uncomfortable position of having to sort of defend my own ethnicity this week. And it's really beside the point, because being Puerto Rican does not make me Mexican or migrant. But it's, you know, I think that it has opened up a dialogue about some really valid challenges in the publishing industry, which is predominantly white, and needs to really reckon with the fact that Latinx voices and voices of color are underrepresented in the industry.
So is your book then, excuse the cliche, the straw that broke the camel's back? So this is, as you say, this has been simmering, and say, for example, Mexican writers feel that they're not getting a chance with big publishing houses, and then you come in and write what they see as their story.
I think that's part of that's part of the conversation.
Right.
I think I also want to be careful, because this is not a universal condemnation by the Latinx community. There have been luminaries from among Mexican authors who have praised this book. But to be sure, it has been a flashpoint. And, you know, I can only speak for my own perspective, which is that I wrote this book from a place of deep love, not because I thought that I was capable of representing anyone else's story or being the sort of definitive voice about migration, but because I hoped to contribute something valuable to the conversation about migrants and about the way the U.S. is treating migrants. I hoped to contribute an additional voice to what I think is an incredibly important dialogue. And, you know, frankly, that the way that we have been having that dialogue in the mainstream in this country is incredibly superficial. And people have not been engaging in these stories in an intimate way. And I felt like it was something I wanted to grapple with.
And you researched the book for 4 years, spent a lot of time in Mexico and along the border talking to people. So you did your homework.
I did, yeah. I spent an awful lot of time researching. I visited Casas de Migrante, the migrant shelters. I volunteered at a desayunador, which is like a breakfast soup kitchen in Mexico. I visited orphanages. I spoke with humanitarian aid workers. I spoke with people who drive out into the desert and leave water in places where migrants have died in hopes that no one will die in those places again. I spoke with many, many migrants themselves and the people who are sort of on the front lines doing the humanitarian aid work of helping to support and protect vulnerable people. And, you know, in the process of that research, every person that I met and spoke with just made me feel more and more determined to contribute my voice to this story.
Did you see any of this coming? Because there's an author's note at the end, which it's like you feel you need to explain yourself.
Yeah. You know, I think it's funny because I did and I didn't see it coming. And there are sort of some regrettable lines in that author's note in hindsight. But
go on. What, like what?
Well, I don't want to second guess all of that right now. But
okay.
I think what I do want to say is that this conversation has been simmering for such a long time, and I did sort of expect some pushback, but I expected it like a year and a half ago when this book went to auction, when there was a huge bidding war in the publishing industry, and then when the book was published in this really enormous way and we began sending it out for quotes. I expected the pushback then. excuse me, but it didn't happen. It, you know, nearly everyone we sent it to for a quote was very warm and encouraging. Most of them gave us quotes. And then,
can just from a distance, and this might be overly simplistic again, Janine, I apologize in advance, but appropriation, is that not sort of a thing that could be leveled at most fiction? Isn't that what fiction is?
Well, this is the age-old question, and it's not a question that I can solve by myself. It's a national conversation that we need to have. And I mean, I feel very strongly that you can't tell people what they can and cannot write or what they can and cannot read. But I do think that if you're going to cross borders and cultures in your fiction, you have an obligation to be sensitive and careful in your research. And I did that to the best of my ability. You only know what you know. So, you know, I was as aware of my blind spots as I was capable of being. But to be sure, I think it's really important to remember that it is a work of fiction.
Yes.
That it's a novel. At the end of the day, it's a story that I made up. And I think that I made it up with 5 years of research because it was important to me to get the details right.
Do you worry about the way the world's going? Do you know?
Well, yeah, yes. It is scary. It's scary to be living in a time when people are afraid to engage in stories.
Yes.
And, you know, when people are... it feels a little bit at moments like we're trying to fight fascism with fascism, you know, and we want to exchange the gatekeepers, you know, who've been in place forever, determining which voices matter and devaluing certain voices for a new set of gatekeepers who will just decide which voices matter and determine, you know, who gets to tell what stories. In fact, I think writers in the best conditions should be compelled by the stories that move in their hearts, should be able to follow those stories carefully and earnestly. And in the end, then it should be for the reader to decide whether they failed or succeeded in that endeavor.
When you were writing the book, you were grieving yourself for your dad who died suddenly. And obviously, I'm not giving too much away because it happens early on in the book, but, you know, Lydia and Luca lose a lot of people early on in the book.
Yes.
So they're grieving as well while running away. Did that help? And this is it's an odd question, you know, I suppose your dad would be very proud that, you know, it's a bit of his legacy, is it?
It so much is, you know, and he would be so proud. And I've said it every day of this journey that I wish he was here, but I recognize that if he was still here, I wouldn't have written, this book wouldn't exist, because it is very much a Gene Cummins-shaped book. You know, I had been steeping in this research for 3 years. I started writing in 2013. My dad died at the dinner table the week before the 2016 presidential election. So I had been really deeply involved in the research of this book for 3.5 years and kind of resisting the narrative, I think, because of all these other questions that we've been discussing. And when my dad died, that loss, I've had significant trauma and grief in my life before. I've written about it before, but my dad's passing was so catastrophic for me, and the grief was so debilitating. I stopped reading and writing for many months, and when I finally returned to the book about 4 months after he died, I completely threw out the 75,000 word draft that I had been writing, and I hauled my laptop into bed with me one day, and I wrote the opening scene of American Dirt, and then the whole book came out of me in about 10 months.
Wow.
And there's no question when I look back on it now that it was the process of grieving for my dad in real time that actually compelled the story across the page.
And that trauma you spoke about in your life was the rape and murder of your two cousins. And you said you wrote about that in your memoir.
I did.
And you drew on that as well, because two very strong characters in the book are Rebecca and Soledad.
Yeah. It's funny how much of your own psychology shows up in well, I should say, shows up in my book without me recognizing it until afterwards. But yeah, it's clear to me now that, you know, when I write about trauma and grief, I am, to be sure, I'm writing from my own life experiences, and I'm acutely aware that most of my readers don't know what it feels like to lose someone you love to a violent murder, and like what that does to the grieving process, and how your grief has to be secondary to survival in times like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, those are the sorts of things that I am processing in my own psyche when I'm writing fiction.
It's a real page turner, and it increases your heart rate, which is good. I cried this morning at that scene with the bank official and Lydia.
Oh.
That's very moving.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
No, I think that's a good thing, isn't it? We all need to cry. So Oprah Winfrey, how does that happen? Is it an email? Does somebody knock on your door and go, Oprah wants to speak to you? How does that happen?
Well, it was an amazing moment. I actually had just gotten off a plane from Ireland, and I had what I thought was going to be an interview with O Magazine, and the woman called me, and you know, I said to her, I'm quite jet lagged, but bear with me, I'll do my best. And she said, no problem, we're just going to wait for my colleague to come on the line. She's going to help me write the story. And then a moment later, the colleague came on the line and she said, Janine, it's Oprah Winfrey. And I think I said, this is not Oprah Winfrey right now. And she said, yes, it is. It's Oprah. And I was just completely, I mean, she's an amazing woman. It was the, you know, it really is the phone call that every writer dreams of. She is a person who has done more to be an advocate for literacy in this country than any other single individual I know of. She has the courage of her convictions. She's a very strong woman, and I just adore her. So it's been a great honor that she chose my book, and that she loves my book as much as she does.
And she's got blowback as well. She's been criticized because she chose your book. Anyway, there was a print run of 500,000, which is outstanding. So this has catapulted you into the stratosphere. And you were saying earlier on that, you know, it's been a weird week. Are you pinching yourself? Is it overwhelming?
Yeah, it's very overwhelming. It's intense, you know. It's difficult to process all of it. It's my fourth book. And I thought, you know, and I wrote all four of those books I've written without an advance. I wrote them, you know, and then you write it first and then you send it off and hope that someone will buy it. And I very much assumed that this book would be received the way the other three were. I never dreamed of this kind of publication. And it's been really intense. It's a lot.
I was going to ask you, do you think President Donald Trump would read it? But he doesn't read, isn't that it? He's said that on many occasions, he doesn't read.
I believe that's true. There's going to be an audio book.
Oh, right, so he could listen to it, yeah. He could,
you never know.
and is it true Clint Eastwood has optioned it, as they say?
No, is one of the many.
Oh,
kind
that's
of,
right.
Yeah, no, it has been optioned for film by a company who recently did a movie with Clint Eastwood.
Was that about the old guy who became a drugs mule?
Yes.
Which is brilliant.
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it, right.
But they also just did, they're currently doing Killers of the Flower Moon with Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio. So they seem to be a great company, and I look forward to seeing how that develops.
Right. Okay. American Dirt, just so you know, it's number two on the Irish bestsellers list before anybody heard of you, as in heard you talking to me.
Yay.
So I'd imagine you should be number one next week.
I hope so. Yeah. Thank you.
American Dirt, Janine Cummins. Just before you go, good luck and Tink from Hedford nieces and nephews. Love you. So proud of you. That's Quiva, Saoirse, Brianna, Scarlett, Jacob and Elijah.
Oh, I love you guys. Thank you.
Okay.
Karma hagat.
Slán, it's been a real pleasure talking to you, Janine. Thanks very much.
Thank
and congratulations
you
again.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.